The Man and the Message, Chapter 1. The True Fatal Element in Jones's Life. What does Ellen White say about the principal reason both for his opponent's resistance to his message and for the development of his later apostasy? Knight frankly recognizes that he was the Lord's special messenger with extraordinary credentials from heaven, sent on a unique mission to help prepare a people for the coming of Christ. But Ellen White gives a quite different reason than the one given in Knight's book for the opposition he met and for his losing his way. Jones's so-called faults were never a valid excuse for anyone to reject his message, but his opponents exploited them as a pretext to justify sinful unbelief on their part. Antipathy toward heaven-sent light and enmity against Christ were the true sources of resistance to Jones's message and the messenger. What eventually unsettled both 1888 messengers and deranged their spiritual faculties was neither their message nor any aspect of it, but the unchristlike persecution inflicted on them by their brethren. This papal spirit, she insists, was, to a great degree, the cause of their later stumbling. It is not the inspiration from heaven that leads one to be suspicious, watching for a chance and greedily seizing upon it to prove that those brethren who differ from us in some interpretation of Scripture are not sound in the faith. There is danger that this course of action will produce the very result assumed, and to a great degree the guilt will rest upon those who are watching for evil. The opposition in our own ranks has imposed upon the Lord's messengers a laborious and soul-trying task. The spirit of persecution against those who are bearing the message of God to the world is the most terrible feature of unchristlikeness that has manifested itself among us since the Minneapolis meeting. At Minneapolis, I have been shown the same ruling spirit that was revealed in the condemnation of Christ. When the papists were in controversy with men who took their stand on the Bible for proof of doctrine, they considered it a matter that only death could settle. I could see a similar spirit cherished in the hearts of our brethren, and I would not give room to it for an hour. I have deep sorrow of heart because I have seen how readily a word or action of Elder Jones is criticized. Feelings of enmity and bitterness are in the heart. She added that his opponents make capital of every defect in his manners, customs, or character, implying a motivation of unjustified spiritual animosity, while admitting Ellen White's often enthusiastic support. And while recognizing Jones's abilities, Knight's book majors in his weaknesses and mistakes, even to the extent of imputing evil motives gratuitously. An uninformed reader will likely find himself increasingly prejudiced against the righteousness by faith message that Jones proclaimed. Reinforcing this antipathy appears to be the purpose of the book. Note an early review of the Review and Herald's periodical for writers, Action Line. Far from recognizing Jones as a special messenger of the Lord, the reviewer sees Jones only painted in a very unflattering portrait dash. A man whose confrontational style and headstrong thinking got him into one difficulty after another. Readers will conclude that nothing such a quixotic figure said should be taken seriously, and Ellen White must have been wrong in endorsing him. Even the title sets the stage for denigrating the message. From 1888 to apostasy advertises to susceptible minds, even of those who do not read the book, the suggestion that the 1888 message implicitly programs the believer toward apostasy. This is the fear that many Seventh-day Adventist leaders and members entertain today, but which Ellen White labels as a fatal delusion. If Ellen White is correct, the impact of this book strengthens that fatal delusion. And this 100 years later.